It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today, we visit the Bonobo Hope Great Ape Trust Sanctuary in Des Moines.
The research that is being done here will never be done again. The extended family, which includes the bonobos and the humans, have been together over 30 years. This is an experiment that you simply can't replicate in a lab with a grant.
Bonobo Hope is home to seven bonobos who have been part of a revolutionary research project that spans more than three decades. Today, we'll meet Kanzi, a 31-year-old male bonobo who can use more than 600 lexigrams, symbols, to communicate. His sister, Panbenicia, and his 2-year-old son, Tico. We'll also meet the humans involved in this project, including Dr. Sue Savage Rumbaugh. This project may be coming to an end. Funding is running out, and recent allegations from former staff members have started an investigation. Today, we'll go inside Bonobo Hope. Join us after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. The Bonobo Hope Great Ape Trust Sanctuary in Des Moines is home to seven bonobos that are part of a unique human bonobo community. Dr. Sue Savage Rumbaugh, a human, and Kanzi, a bonobo, are the most famous members of this community. Savage Rumbaugh, or Sue, as Kanzi and everybody else calls her, has been doing research into the ability of bonobos to acquire human language for more than three decades. Kanzi is a 31-year-old male bonobo who has learned to communicate very effectively with human beings through the use of lexigrams, or symbols, and also gestures. Sue, Kanzi, and the other bonobos have been living in Des Moines since 2005, shortly after the Great Ape Trust was founded by Iowa businessman Ted Townsend. Townsend discontinued his funding for the project last year. He made a gift of the building to the organization, but without a funder, the future of Bonobo Hope is uncertain. There are new threats now to the future of Bonobo Hope. In recent days, the organization has been getting a lot of publicity over allegations made by former employees. They're voicing concerns that Sue Savage Rumbaugh, the director and senior scientist at Bonobo Hope, is not mentally fit to run the organization, and that her behavior poses a direct threat to the safety of the apes. At this point, no one from the inside is talking about what's going on. The people who made the allegations have turned down our requests for interviews. Board members are unwilling to talk, and Sue turned down an interview request telling me that the board has advised her not to speak with any more members of the press. She did speak with the Des Moines Register last week. In spite of that, today we will give you the chance to find out what life inside the Bonobo Hope Great Ape Trust Sanctuary is like. On June 18th, I visited Bonobo Hope along with Catherine Perkins and Emily Woodbury, talk show producers for Iowa Public Radio. When we arrived in the morning, we were met outside by Sue Savage Rumbaugh, Ken Schweller, chairman of the board of the Bonobo Hope Great Ape Trust Sanctuary, and Tico, a 2-year-old bonobo. He is the son of Kanzi.
We have to plan what we're going to do. We're trying to plan how we should plan.
Okay.
So we haven't got our plan for how we're going to planned yet.
Our plan for the day was to meet the apes and interview Sue, Ken, and some of the other people who are involved in the day-to-day care of the apes. Most importantly, though, we wanted to witness the bonobos communicating and maybe even have a chance to talk to them ourselves. We brought a couple of bags full of gifts with us that we hoped would help break the ice. But it only took us about a minute after we got there to discover that the day was not going to go as we planned. Sue called a meeting for everyone in the building, bonobos and humans. Tico, Kanzi, and Alikia were the only bonobos we could see. Tico was sitting with Sue, and Kanzi and Alikia were in a large room separated from the lobby by a thick plane of plexiglass. Alikia is Tico's mother. She is also Kanzi's mate, at least for the time being. Bonobos are not known to be monogamous. Alikia is not part of the language experiment, and she showed absolutely no interest in the meeting. Kanzi, on the other hand, was completely engaged with the humans. The building is wired so that the other bonobos in the building that we couldn't see could hear us talking, and they can also hear Kanzi's vocalizations. As we talk, if you listen closely, you can hear a thumping. That's Kanzi hitting the window to get our attention. And first you'll hear Sue, And then Ken Schweller explains to us what's going on.
Kazi, we're going to come talk to you in a moment.
All these bonobos have been raised alongside humans in a kind of a bicultural situation. And so when decisions are made, it's always a group decision. And so right now, they're feeling a little isolated that we're talking out here.
He's calling Sue. He just asked for Sue. Okay, I'm going to... Okay, you guys keep talking. We're still planning. Part of our planning is me. See, he's talking to me now. Do you understand that he's wanting me to come include him in the plan?
As we moved our chairs into the right spot so that Kanzi could see us, Kanzi got my attention by beating on the glass. He'd spotted the bags of presents that I brought, and he gestured to them and to me. Then he started vocalizing in an excited way.
Yeah, he wants what's in my bags. Yeah.
He also was using signs to express his enthusiasm. He kept pointing to the bags that I brought, and he clearly wanted to see what was inside. When I talked to Kanzi, he nodded his head in agreement every time I asked him a question.
And some bubbles, because I heard you like bubbles. Yeah?
Heather, would you
Good.
See if Suzanne and Liz are coming and if Michelle's there?
And we brought,
if they're not coming, would you let me know?
We brought some balloons. Do you like to play with balloons? Yeah?
You're cute.
Are they good?
Every human being in the building dropped everything they were doing to come to this meeting, some more willingly than others.
Sam, are you going to be part of our plan today?
Oh, no. We have a lot of brains around here. I'll just sit here quietly.
We need to know what you'll be doing while we're making our plans, because the bonobos, Pico and Kanzi and others, are very affected by what you're doing. What will you be doing?
How about I just leave? Okay? And then they won't be affected.
All right, so...
After we all finally got organized for the meeting, Sue suggested that we interview every single person in the building and that we pair each one of them with one of the bonobos. Kanzi enthusiastically agreed with this plan, and it became clear that it was going to carry the day. It does sound like a great idea in theory, but it turned out to be extremely difficult for us to carry out. One of the first people we interviewed was Ken Schweller, chairman of the board. He was accompanied by Tico, the 2-year-old bonobo, but Tico didn't pay very much attention to the interview. I started out by asking Ken about an important definition. Some people criticize the work that Sue has done with the bonobos by saying that it is clear that the apes are communicating with humans, but that they're not really using language. Sue says it is language. I asked Ken why it matters if it's language or not.
Well, a linguist at MIT, Noam Chomsky, has posited that language is specific to the human species. I prefer, and the people working with the bonobos prefer to think that language falls more on a continuum, that what you may be seeing here is a difference in cognitive organization and complexity. Our brains are larger, but I don't see a real difference in kind. Now, this is like talking religion if you talk to linguists, you know, because we're going to start talking about, do they have embedded sentences? Do they have deictic reference? Do they have recursion? There are all these hallmarks of what a true language is. But if you think of language as communicating, you've seen here today, these bonobos can clearly communicate what it is they want. They can talk about what they want to do in the future. They can talk about the past. So I guess we can all agree at least that they are communicating.
There has been a major funding change at the Great Ape Trust.
There has indeed.
And that has thrown the future of this organization into question.
Yes.
Why do you think it's important to have this institution in Des Moines, Iowa?
I am a cognitive psychologist and a computer scientist, but from now on until we get the money to stay here in Iowa, I'm going to be fundraising chief number one. We simply have to stay here. This is a unique institution. The research that is being done here will never be done again. There's no other place in the world that is doing this level of research. The extended family, which includes the bonobos and the humans, have been together over 30 years. This is an experiment that you simply can't replicate in a lab with a grant. It's a unique cultural aspect for Iowa. Why should Iowa give up something that is so unique, so wonderful, something that you can't find anywhere else in the world? And it's not going to cost us a lot to stay here. That's what keeps me up at night, that it just simply is not going to cost that much. When Great Ape Trust started, it was by Ted Townsend. He very generously supported the trust at one point with over $4 million a year. But as the years went on, you can't sustain that kind of funding, and Ted reluctantly was simply unable to continue. This has means we have to change somewhat. We're going to do what we've always wanted to do, what we've all of us have really always wanted to do. We're opening this place up to the public because I think if you see what we're doing, you're going to want to help. You just can't help it.
What has to change here to make it possible to bring the public in and give people an opportunity to really see what's going
Thanks.
On?
Thanks. We're almost there. We must abide by USDA regulations. And so we need to have an exhibitor's license. We need to organize how we're going to do the visits. One thing we don't want to do is be like a zoo, where people just come in and they don't know what they're looking at, because you won't appreciate what you're seeing. We are trying to provide an educational opportunity to people who want to come and learn about the bonobos. We want to provide a sanctuary for these particular seven bonobos, a place to live out their life in comfort. And, you know, if it isn't here, the options are very stark. If we go under here, then in all probability they will be going to a zoo or possibly another sanctuary. But that will be the end of the language research program. That will be the end of all the cultural experiments that have been going on. So from a scientific point of view, we need to stay here and we need to continue that mission.
We've learned so much from this research about the language capacity and what they can do. What else is out there?
There are many, many things because of the close relationship of the bonobos to us. It's not only language that is important. We can study, for example, the ability to see the future, to talk about the future, to remember the past, issues of fairness, justice, promising, forgiveness, basic morality. All these questions can be explored at a basic level with the bonobos. We have an interesting opportunity here because they understand what we say. We can ask them questions and they can answer. We can ask them to do certain things. We can ask them, tomorrow will you do this? You know, and then see if they do it on the next day. You can't do this in a culture that is not linguistically based. So we can do experiments here that could not be done any other place.
Ken Schweller is the chairman of the board of the Bonobo Hope Great Ape Trust Sanctuary. He's also a computer science professor at Buena Vista University. This interview was recorded in June. Schweller declined to give us a follow-up interview in the wake of allegations that Sue Savage Rumbaugh is unfit to continue as director of Bonobo Hope. You'll hear more of our visit in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. 3 months ago, along with Iowa Public Radio talk show producers Catherine Perkins and Emily Woodbury, I spent the day at the Bonobo Hope Great Ape Trust Sanctuary in Des Moines. The facility is home to seven bonobos who've been part of a 3-decades-long research project headed by Dr. Sue Savage Rumbaugh. In the last 2 weeks, Bonobo Hope has been getting a lot of attention because of allegations made by former employees that Sue, the director and senior scientist, is not mentally fit to remain in that role and that the apes are at risk. What we offer you today is a glimpse into what life was like at Bonobo Hope one day in June. While I was talking to Ken Schweller, Tico, a 2-year-old bonobo who has captured the heart of every human at Bonobo Hope, was playing nearby with Liz Rupert Pugh. Liz is Sue's sister, and she has also been working with bonobos for 3 decades. She is not a scientist, but she helped raise Kanzi and Pambanisha, and she has very close relationships with all of the apes. She was trying to keep Tico busy with some flashcards, and he seemed about as interested in the flashcards as a 2-year-old human child would be. He was more interested in flipping his plastic chair upside down, putting Play-Doh in his mouth, and playing bite. You're chewing on his fingers. Why are you doing that?
Oh, we're playing bite. He wants to play right now. Bonobos and chimps all play bite a lot. When we're playing bite, we touch each other with our teeth. You can watch them playing bite with each other. There's a different levels of biting, some that could be life-threatening and others that are just play biting. So when we talk about biting, we're not always saying, oh, well, he puts his teeth on real light and mm-hmm. can teach him about how not to bite too hard with my teeth. And I just slightly put it on, kind of wiggle my teeth a little bit, and then we play, and it feels good, and it creates a good bond. He, in particular, because he's young, likes to play bite. Did you know that Tico almost died?
I don't know much about it because I haven't been able to find more. But tell me what happened.
He, at about 2 months, he was totally shut off to the world. His head was back, and he couldn't cling with his feet to his mother, Alikia. As you can see now, he's quite active.
Yeah, he's very active.
Maybe too active, but he will look at you, and he communicates and checks with his eyes. So his eye gaze is totally different. Doing all kinds of fantastic stuff where he can roll around and be sweet. But he would have died. And Pamanisha, who has a close bond with Sue and I over many years and lots of other people that have been part of her life, understands the human world and that we could help him. Because we raised her too. Mm-hmm. And she knows what we do. And she brought him out to us to save him.
So and she brought him to you?
Yeah, she brought him out to us. She wanted us to help him. And she knew that we could help him. She's able to understand things at that level. Sitting in this cube. Sitting is my major way to structure and discipline is sitting and calming down a little bit. Or think about what he's done wrong, but I always give him lots of attention in a positive way, hopefully, because negative doesn't work. Never works. I mean, punishment.
Who does Tico think of as his mother?
I would say Suka. She took care of him for so long, 24 hours a day. Now he's old enough to be out in society a little bit. Get that out of your mouth. Yeah. So now he needs the whole village to raise him, but I think that relationship with the mother, and I'm more probably like a grandmother or somebody, but I've been there every day since he was born, so.
Hi.
Whoa, be careful, don't jump on anybody.
You hold my hand, that's okay.
Yeah.
Hi, how are you doing? Yeah, you're such a good boy. Thank you for the smile.
It's good to have just a tight group of some people who take care of him and then have the others come in and socialize. So it's kind of like mom sitting on the park bench saying, oh, you know, the kid's out playing, but.
Oh, thank you.
They're being monitored.
You're
don't
so
jump
sweet.
On anybody.
When you watch him now, does he behave basically as a normal 2-year-old bonobo would?
Yes, he does. And he's a pretty happy little boy most of the time.
Has he already been learning lexigrams and to communicate with you that way?
Yes, he has been using lexigrams. He needs to be out a lot more every day, but he's using some as you. Pamanisha. That's Pamanisha. He's used Nyota's name. Oh, see? See what happens? It's not very good. He uses milk. He can say banana. He can say go. He can say outdoors. I have a list of a lot. Especially kiss. He knows kiss and bite and tickle. And he uses quite a few new ones every day, so. Whoa! Tico.
Liz Rupert Pugh is one of the caretakers, really the chief caretaker at the Bonobo Hope Great Ape Trust Sanctuary in Des Moines. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. In June, we spent a day at Bonobo Hope, and today we're listening to the interviews we recorded that day.
After I talked with Liz and Tico outside, we went back inside with Liz to meet Pan Benicia. Pan Benicia was not very interested in meeting us.
You guys are nice, aren't you?
We are nice.
We're very nice.
I can tell by the tone of our voices, were
you? Yeah, we'd love to meet you, Pan Benicia.
Pan Benicia, they want to meet you. Do you think that would be okay? How about if you come out here and you sit on this blanket?
After Pan Benicia declined to be interviewed, we sat down in the hallway with Liz. Liz, how did you get involved in doing this research and working with the bonobos?
Well, Sue's my sister, and when I was about 10 or 11, I used to go down and watch her. She was working with Lucy and a lot of the famous sighing chimps down there, and I got to be around the chimpanzees down there. I was actually going in with them, and that got me very interested in doing it. Later, when she moved to Atlanta, Georgia, and married Dr. Dwayne Rumbaugh, it was the union of them that really got it started going. And I came down, and then I was involved in it from the age of 18.
Wow.
I have my whole life. This is all I've done my whole life.
So your role was really to be the caretaker, to be involved physically with them.
I'm in with them. I'm using language with them. I'm trying to expand upon what they know, just like I would if I had a young child, and I'm trying to develop them into the best young child that I can. So in a way, I'm doing a lot more than just giving them food and blankets at night, moving them around, and I'm actually in with them. I'm in with them all day. I'm in with them here as much as I can possibly be. It's a different world on the inside. And language helps a lot with that. Is when I get to the point that Pam and Isha is now, I can just say something's poisonous and she won't touch it. She's like a 4-year-old. I just talk to her and I explain to her. But I do learn the bonobo rules, and I do follow the bonobo rules in there because I have to. Otherwise, I'll get bitten. They have a real who's in charge and all that. But Pam and Isha, when she's in there, she is able to be in charge without any violence whatsoever and control the whole group without biting or hurting or hitting, whatever. She's wonderful. So I feel successful with that part of it.
So you've been doing this for 30 years?
Well, since 78.
So. Yeah. And you've been interacting with these specific bonobos every day.
Yeah, that's what I've done my whole life. They're a family to me. They're like family members with hair on them. So I don't that they aren't quite going to grow up and go to college, but I feel as close to them. So if I needed to save them or whatever, I would just jump out in the car. In front of the car and save them without even thinking twice about it.
How would you describe your relationship with Pan Benicia? And I know that you don't want to anthropomorphize, but using terms that people can relate to.
Well, I love her. That's the bottom line. I feel feelings towards her that, well, I have the same feelings towards Heather. So there,
and Heather is your daughter.
Yeah, with both of them. I'm really glad I have a human daughter that can go on and do all the fabulous stuff that Heather is doing. And you can tell that she's pretty, Heather, my daughter, is pretty shrewd about relationships. And I think it's from being in there in the social life. She's learned from them. Now, with Pam and Isha, she's definitely my favorite one. I hate to say that in front of everybody, but She's a good soul. She loves me too, and I can feel it when I'm with her. I feel it.
This has been, we've talked about how the bonobos are kind of like part of your family. You're a part of their family as well. But of course, your sister is the senior scientist here. So this has been a big family operation for a very long time. When you look into the future, since this has been so much dependent on you and your sister, What do you see for these bonobos? Because there will come a time when you and she won't be able to be a part of their lives.
I would hope to get people integrated into their lives who can go in with them. I hope Heather will stay around and go in with them. And Susanna's able to go in with them. I'm sure she doesn't right now, but Kanzi is very nice to her through the box. And he's let her take blood from his arm just by sticking it out. And they have a really good relationship. You can see it when they're touching each other.
Liz Rupert Pugh. The Bonobo Hope Great Ape Trust Sanctuary is not just a family affair. When we were there in June, Susanna Maisel was working at Bonobo Hope. She's a psychologist who's gone back to school in the hopes of becoming a veterinarian. You'll hear my interview with her in just a moment. When we were there, it seemed like Susanna was the most likely member of the staff to follow in the footsteps of Sue Savage Rumbaugh. She seemed to be trusted by Sue and her sister Liz, and it was clear that she had developed strong relationships with many of the bonobos. Our impressions may have been wrong, or maybe things have changed since our visit, but Susanna Maisel no longer works at Bonobo Hope, and she is a member of a group calling themselves the Bonobo 12. 12 former employees who have gone to the board and to the public with their allegations that Sue Savage Rumbaugh is not mentally fit to remain the director of Bonobo Hope and that her behavior is putting the apes at risk. I'll detail some of the allegations in a few minutes, but first, this is what Susanna had to say in June when I asked her about the experience she had with Kanzi that inspired her to go back to school to become a veterinarian.
It was watching Dr. Brigetta Hughes work with the bonobos. I got to participate in an EKG procedure on Kanzi's heart and then a sonogram procedure on his heart. And he did it cooperatively. There's no need to sedate him for this. So it was seeing her work with them and realizing that I think, is the future of medicine with primates, is being able to do this cooperatively.
So you are going to school to be a veterinarian, but your goal is only to work with primates?
Well, I might have to do a couple other things to help pay the bills, but my ideal is to come back here to the Great Ape Trust once I've got my degree and be Kanzi's doctor for the rest of his life. Someone that he can trust, someone he can say, hey, I've got a tummy ache, what should I do about it? Or if Pamanisha has a headache, you know, she can come to me and say, I've got a headache, can you give me something for it?
Working with these bonobos has clearly changed the course of your life. Why do you think that is? Why did they touch you so deeply that you would make a life-changing decision?
Well, this place is unlike any other place on Earth. You're not going to just walk into a zoo and have an ape talk back at you. Yes, they'll interact with you in a very intelligent manner, but you're not going to be able to have a conversation with them. And these apes listen and understand.
What brought you here in the first place?
Well, I had studied Dr. Savage Rumbaugh's work as an undergrad when I was doing my psychology major with a focus in animal learning and behavior. So I wrote to her while she was still at Georgia State, and I said, hey, I'd like to come out and meet you because you're one of my idols. And she said, sure, come on out. And then she offered me a job, but failed to tell me that the job was going to be in Iowa, not in Georgia. So it was a bigger life change than I had expected, but a very welcome one.
How long have you been at the Great Ape Trust?
Almost 7 years now.
Tell me about the relationships that you've formed. We've talked to a lot of people who have known these bonobos since they were born, since the bonobos were very small. But you came into things a little later on. How did your relationships develop with them when you first started working here?
Well, it's much different because I didn't automatically have that mom role that Dr. Sue and her sister Liz have. They've been taking care of them their whole lives. I kind of had to develop that slowly over time, where they first saw me as someone who just comes in and cleans their floors, and I might give them a little bit of food, but I'm not really anybody important that they have to listen to. And then over time, they kind of get used to having me around and get used to me saying, well, why don't we go do this today, or I need your help with this, and then they're more willing to do it. So it's a gradual development of the relationship.
Which one of the bonobos are you closest to?
That would probably be Kanzi. He was the first bonobo I met when they were back at Georgia. And I saw him, he asked me to go find him some peanuts in the sweetest way possible on the keyboard and just gave me this look, and I melted, and I'm like, this guy is really smart. he knows just how to manipulate people into doing what he wants them to do. I didn't actually find the peanuts, but that was okay. It was good enough that I made the effort.
Having studied psychology, and I'm sure you did a great deal of research about this project back when it was in Georgia, but also the other ape language projects like Washoe and Coco, what surprised you about interacting with these bonobos when you got here?
I'm not really sure how to answer that. It's one thing to read it in the literature, but then when you come and you actually see what they're doing, it just makes it that much more believable. And a lot of the things that they're capable of doing haven't been published in the literature. Like, we don't have a lot of stuff published on their talk about the past or the future. But they can do that. They can plan days, weeks, months in advance for things that are coming up.
Can you give me an example of a time when you've witnessed that?
Well, when we've had staff members go away on vacation and we say, okay, they're going to come back in 2 weeks. The apes don't ask about that staff member until, say, about the end of the 2 weeks. And they're like, hey, when's so-and-so coming back?
Susanna Maisel, an interview recorded in June while she was employed at Bonobo Hope Great Ape Trust Sanctuary. She is now a member of the group trying to get Sue Savage Rumbaugh removed as director and senior scientist of Bonobo Hope. In a moment, I'll detail the allegations, and we'll listen to my June conversation with Dr. Sue, Kanzi, and Panbanisha. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Back in June, I visited the Bonobo Hope Great Ape Trust Sanctuary in Des Moines, along with Iowa Public Radio talk show producers Emily Woodbury and Catherine Perkins. In a moment, we'll listen to the interview I recorded with the director and senior scientist of Bonobo Hope, Sue Savage Rumbaugh. She is now on paid leave from the organization because of serious allegations made by former employees. She can visit Bonobo Hope under supervision, and it is clear that she's still spending a lot of time there. On September 9th, a group of 12 former employees, including Susanna Maisel, who we heard from a few moments ago, sent a letter to the board of directors alleging that Sue Savage Rumbaugh is mentally unfit to continue in her role and that her behavior has put the safety of the animals at risk. They cite an incident that occurred last year when Kanzi and Nyota, another adult male bonobo, were allowed to be together. They fought, and Kanzi broke Nyota's jaw. That had to be repaired through surgery. In another instance, Matata, the matriarch of the bonobo family, became impregnated by one of her sons, who researchers thought was still sexually immature. They also allege that Sue has engaged in dangerous behavior, such as forgetting where the apes were and leaving them outdoors without water. None of the accusers would agree to be interviewed for this program. Ken Schweller, chairman of the board of directors, said he was unable to talk to us, and Sue herself told us that she had been asked not to speak to any more members of the press. She did defend herself in an interview with the Des Moines Register last week. When we visited in June, Sue asked that we interview her in the company of Kanzi and his sister Panbanisha. Kanzi and Panbanisha hadn't been in the same room for about 2 years. When they got together, they were clearly overwhelmed with joy. They vocalized loudly and almost immediately lay down together to groom each other. Once the grooming session started, I took advantage of the relative quiet and started asking Sue questions. Sue, we have plastic keyboards in front of us with all of the different lexigrams. How many symbols do the bonobos know?
They know about 600 symbols. They know many more words than that. We haven't done a thorough test of how many words they understand, but it's in the thousands. And they understand sentences they've never heard before. Any novel complex sentence is not... If they have a sense of what's going on in the way that you might have a sense of what's going on in the soap opera, they know the players, they know the basic subtext. They can understand almost any adult English sentence in a context that's making sense to them.
A lot of the lexigrams that we can see are of nouns, of things or places, food. There are action lexigrams as well, and then of course lexigrams for different people. Do they understand if you talk about feelings?
emotions?
The reason that you see lots of nouns and then verbs and is because when we began, we didn't understand how intelligent they were. So we began with simple things that you could point at. Like you can point at a tomato. You can point at a banana. You can point at a key. And we began with just 6 lexigrams with Kanzi and Matata. And we didn't really make much progress with Matata the first year at all. She was an adult and wild-caught, and our language didn't make much sense to her. She was trying to teach me her language. She would talk, like you hear Kanzi talking right now, and she would take me around by the hand and point at things out in the woods and things in the cage and expect me to learn the word. And I wasn't very good at learning bonobo language, and I still haven't learned bonobo language.
You have created a culture here, a very language-rich culture with bonobos, with humans. Tico is here in the room with us, and as we've talked about earlier, you're raising him in a bicultural environment where he identifies you as his mother, but he also interacts with bonobos and is learning their ways as well. What are you trying to accomplish by creating this culture?
Well, we want to understand human evolution. How did humans get on the trajectory to create the city of Des Moines? How did we get to a point where we can go to the moon? Why do we have the wars that we do? Why do we have the terrorists that we do? We want to understand the evolution of humanity. And the closest living relatives are the bonobos. But it's not just a matter of looking at a bonobo and asking, why did we walk bipedally? Why did we have a bigger brain? Why did we make tools? The issue is, how do we come to be as we are? It is through language that we structure the human community. So if we don't understand the relationship between the kind of beings we were, the way in which we've structured language, the kind of society we want to build, it's easy to think of ourselves as just a genetically predetermined by looking at bonobos that can do things we never had any idea that bonobos can do. We realize that there's a lot of freedom in the genes that we have, and we're very fortunate we have that freedom, because it means we can build possibly an ideal world, a world without aggression, a world where people understand each other, a world where communication works.
Of course, in the wild, bonobos communicate with each other. They have their own culture, very different from this culture, of course. When you see the bonobos that you work with who have acquired language, do you think that having that language changes the way that they think?
It changes the way that they think, because a lot of the influence of that language is human influence. It's an influence of the culture that raised me. And across time, I've seen it even influence Matata. So the culture and the language structures the way we regard each other, the kinds of affordances we give each other on a daily basis. And it's the way we lead our lives that does determine how we think. But it's not coming from the verbs and the nouns and the structure of the language. It's coming from how we view each other and how we take the opportunities to express those views. And one of the great things about the bonobos is that they're so open and so honest and so willing to freely express, both with the keyboard and with their vocalizations. And this is one of the things that every person that comes in that doesn't know them is struck by, the way in which they reveal themselves, both through their sounds, through their behaviors, and through their use of the keyboard. It's not just interesting that they use language. It emotionally grabs you. You can't emotionally dismiss how they use language and how they feel about you. They want a relationship with you. They were a little scared initially. They want to touch you. They want to groom you. Clancy is emphasizing. They want to touch you and groom you. They want to make contact with us. And language has given them a means to do that, and it's given them the desire to do that. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. And it's rare in the world that two such closely related species are trying so hard to communicate. They want to reach out, to touch each other's soul, to touch each other's heart, to help each other. People want to do it, and these bonobos want to do it. It's more than science. It's two species reaching across that boundary and feeling like, hey, maybe we can make it. Maybe we bonobos and we humans are closer than we think, and we're not actually alone on the planet, and maybe we can learn from each other how to build a better world.
People who question the ability of animals to think, people who might question the realness of the language that the apes here have acquired, one of the things that they will point out is that animals live in the present, particularly wild animals live in the present because, of course, they have all of these pressing needs to keep themselves alive. But we know that animals can remember. People today have told us that the bonobos here think about the future and can plan for the future. Is that something that you think they learned here, or is that something that you think is innate in bonobos?
I think it's something that they have to do to survive in the wild and large groups in the areas that they live in. They travel about 2 to 5 miles a day. Now, if you took 100 people, and we're going to walk 2 to 5 miles a day through Des Moines, we're going to have to coordinate, and if we just wander around, we might not get anything to eat. We have to figure out where we're going in the forest. You can end up at a place where there's no food. And once you make a decision about where to go, that decreases your other options for the next day and the next day and the next day. Bonobos are very large-bodied creatures. You cannot wander around in the forest and find enough food for 100 bonobos. You have to plan way ahead of time, 2 weeks, maybe 2 months, where you're going to arrive, how you're going to share the food. It's not an option. I don't think it's a survival option for them to be unable to plan.
You have been doing this research with some of these very bonobos for more than 30 years. Kanzi is 31 years old now. What is left for you to discover about the language research that you've been doing?
Oh, we're just on the cusp of beginning to understand the capabilities of the bonobos. We've simply shown that they can learn words, that they can understand complex sentences, that they can form complex sentences. We're getting into now looking at how they relate their words to their manufacture of tools, looking at how they relate words to how they structure the social environment. But the most fascinating thing is going to be the cross-generational effect. What Tico is going to be able to do, and even in Yoda, is going to go way beyond Kanzi and Pamanisha. What people are going to be able to do that continue to work with them across 2 or 3 generations, if this project continues, the bonobos might be able to actually start to utter English words. You might be able to mold your vocal tract and be able to make the kinds of sounds that they have. They might be able to actually start to write, not just have to point to the words. We humans have expanded our skills for many, many generations, 2.5 million years. This is 30 years. It's a baby. Culture grows.
Right. You were at Georgia State University for 23 years. Why did you decide to come here?
Well, the bonobo colony grew in size. Their abilities became worldwide fame. it became very clear, as I've said, that we were just scratching the surface and that this research needed to continue in a cross-generational manner. And Ted Townsend wanted that to be able to happen and to continue to fund us. And as the size of the colony grows, it becomes more and more difficult to get a grant to fund. It's more difficult to get a grant to fund seven bonobos than it is Kanzi. But what seven bonobos can do as a culture, as a group, is far more fascinating than what Kanzi as a single bonobo can do. So the amount of money that you can get in an ordinary grant stays relatively the same as your colony grows. And most researchers don't continue cross-generation with the same organisms. So we were hopeful that in coming here we would have a long-term home. But Ted has not been able to continue to finance that across time. So we're going to need to find a way to link ourselves into the state of Iowa for the bonobos to continue to remain together and for this study to go in a cross-generational manner. But the main reason we came here was so that there would be a future.
What do you need to be able to stay in Iowa?
First of all, we need just a minimal amount. If we had, say, 15 donors that would contribute $10,000 or $20,000, we would be able to survive here. So we need some founders, some supporters that will help us have a minimal level of funding. Beyond that, we would like to open up the whole campus. We would have a larger fundraising campaign that would really make it possible for people in the bonobos to interact in highly sophisticated ways. Always before, we couldn't bring anybody in. At Georgia, we were just a research institution and mostly here. So we couldn't look at what it is the bonobos really want us to look at, which is how they do make a different relationship with humanity. And I would predict that within 10 to 20 years out of this lab will come the most eloquent spokespeople, the most eloquent academic spokespeople for animal rights, and the most eloquent bonobo spokespeople that will be able to make a case for animal rights that is impeccable and irresistible.
Dr. Sue Savage Rumbaugh. She is director and senior scientist at the Bonobo Hope Great Ape Trust Sanctuary in Des Moines. She's now on paid leave following the allegations of a group of former employees. This interview was recorded on June 18th. Visiting Bonobo Hope was a fascinating experience. It's clear from observing the apes and the humans that the community they've built and the relationships they've formed really could not be replicated. The research that's been published seems to be just scratching the surface of what is possible to discover with this group of apes. 3 months have passed, the funding situation has not improved, and the recent allegations have given Bonobo Hope a great deal of bad publicity. The facility recently passed a USDA inspection, and Ken Schweller, chairman of the board, assures us that they are continuing to pursue an exhibitor's license. But from an outsider's perspective, the future now looks very bleak. This Talk of Iowa was produced by Catherine Perkins, Emily Woodbury, and our executive producer, Jeff Schmidt. You can see pictures of Tico, Kanzi, and our visit on our Facebook page, Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.